The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we are going to take a slight detour from our normal programming, and instead we're going to raise some questions with our guest at the top of our program, and I invite you, the audience, everywhere that you can hear this program, to share your points of view and your thoughts. I was concerned after watching President Obama's State of the Union message that the commentators did not look at a lot of areas that many of us find important that were not addressed at all, or only briefly, or some might suggest in a disingenuous manner. My guest to lead us in our first discussion will be Ralph Nader. Ralph is without a second when it comes to creating more laws that help protect us over the last many decades than anyone else I know in public office. He is directly responsible for many of our most important bills, for example, to protect the consumer from the onslaught of corporate short-term profits and Friedmanite free market and unregulated capitalism, landmark acts for freedom of information, clean water, clean air, whistleblower protection, pension protection, wholesome foods, and others have been enacted by Congress. And they were implemented due to Ralph Nader's tireless efforts to speak for the welfare of American citizens. A graduate of Princeton and Harvard University, Ralph has been a presidential candidate for 5 elections, building his platform on consumer rights, humanitarian and civil rights efforts, environmental sanity, and democratic government. His most recent book is Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism. And it targets many crimes being committed by corporate industries and government agencies that should steam us to take concerted action to protect democracy. Later in the program, we will be joined by Rocky Anderson. He is a former 2-term mayor of Salt Lake City, serving from 2000-2008. He is the executive director of an organization, High Road for Human Rights. He practiced law for 21 years in Utah and was listed in Best Lawyers in America. He's a former member of the Democratic Party, and he left over its evisceration of the Constitution. And he is concerned that the Democratic Party has morphed into the flip side of the GOP. And we'll talk with him also on this. Nice to have you with us today, Ralph Nader.
Thank you very much, Gary. Nice to be with you.
Let me begin by sharing a few of the areas that I would have hoped he would have gone into that are also pressing. And then once I'm only going to give the title of these. Take any of these that you wish, and then give us your perspective on them, please.
Sure.
I would have liked to have seen President Obama to have made a stand to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, to ban commodity tradings that are essential to life, such as food, land, water, and currencies, to stop all of the credit default swaps and derivatives, unless a person has the money to pay for them at face value, to stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more of these no-interest bailout loans to corporations, hedge funds, and governments, but none to the American people, to declare a moratorium on home foreclosures, to create a national food program that would address the hunger needs of 16 million children, 12 million of whom are suffering from acute food shortages, to address how he would see the deghettoization of America, and to start programs in the ghetto areas that would help the people and to resuscitate the entire community, to create proper reforestation programs employing youth, much as FDR did with the Civil Conservation Corps, to look at our infrastructure not by giving major contracts to big corporations that are politically connected, but really look at what we need to hire skilled people in local communities to create better health, safer levees, waterways, gas mains, water mains, bridges, and tunnels, to forgive all late fees on student loans and to cap the interest rate at 1% on student loans, to do the same for credit loans, to repeal laws that prevent student loan holders from declaring bankruptcy, to support senior citizens and others who need health care but are denied it, even under the existing system, where we can then sponsor community-based nonprofit hospitals and medical care in the United States. And very important, to look about closing and decommissioning our nuclear plants and shifting towards geothermal, which we have over 30,000 springs, solar and wind energy. Also to ban all fundings other than government funding of elections, take corporate money out of politics, to demilitarize our forces around the world, to cease gas, hydrofracking, and offshore drilling, to give a proper audit of the Defense Department, Homeland Security, the CIA, and reduce their budgets to what is actually necessary to protect America, to also to stop funding corporations like Bank of America that are too big to fail, but according to an organization I believe that you actually helped start, you were behind Public Citizen, if I remember correctly, weren't you?
Yes.
Well, Public Citizen just came out with a statement yesterday saying, Public Citizen to financial regulators, quote, Bank of America poses a grave threat to U.S. financial stability, should be broken up instead of bailed out. And finally, to open up the, to create a national health prevention program. Right now, the number one cause of death in the United States is not being addressed, like heart disease and cancers and diabetes. We are increasing. Not a word about how we can become healthier, the choices we need to make. And also to look at the way that the State Department has been used to force Monsanto's genetically engineered food into countries that don't want them, according to WikiLeaks, threatening countries that do not support Monsanto's genetic engineering. And I believe, having just completed a major film that will be out shortly, looking at 30 years of what has happened to vets that have not been helped, in fact, longer, going clear back to not acknowledging Agent Orange and now not acknowledging what they need to help them so they don't come back and end up committing suicide, to really look after our vets. Those are, and also, why didn't he address our failed war on drugs that we shouldn't have, our war on poverty, the war on terror, and what we're doing wrong? Those were my concerns that were not addressed. Would you add any you have, and what you believe, if you were the President of the United States, you would have taken to the American public? The forum is yours.
Well, that sounds like the Gary Knoll State of the Union address. Pretty good, Gary. I would compare that with Barack Obama, and it's like a towering pillar compared to his rhetoric, which started out with militaristic rhetoric and ended with militaristic rhetoric. And he had the nerve to say that the criminal wars of aggression that he extended from Bush and Iraq and Afghanistan, where he sent American soldiers to kill and die, and he says that their example is something we should emulate domestically in our country. Well, we would like to emulate examples under the rule of law, under obeying the Constitution, under the advancement of peace, safety, health. It's just amazing how this man is so awed by the military armaments of his government that he spends far more time in the White House getting briefed and approving raids around the country, around the world, than he does on the following preventable deaths in the United States, which he spent almost no time on. 58,000 workers die from workplace-related diseases and trauma every year in America. OSHA figures. 65,000 people die every year in America because of air pollution. EPA figures. 100,000 people die every year in America due to medical negligence in hospitals. Harvard School of Public Health study. 45,000 people die every year in America, 800 a week, because they cannot afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated. Harvard Medical School study, peer-reviewed, printed in the December 2009 American Journal of Public Health. And over 5,000 Americans a year dying from contaminated food, both imported and domestic, because we have a starved food inspection system in this country without enough inspectors and without enough prosecutors. Now, just add those up, and you can see that even not counting another 100,000 deaths in hospitals from hospital-induced infections, according to the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, if you add that, you're over 300-some thousand preventable deaths a year, every year in the United States, and not a mention, not any attention. He doesn't get briefed on that in the White House. He gets briefed on what's going on in some valley in Afghanistan. He gets briefed on how many drones are hovering above areas to strike at a moment's notice in some foreign country without respecting any national airspace of any country. Lawless behavior violating international law. But he doesn't get briefed. He doesn't ask for briefing on how to save all these American lives and many more injuries and illnesses that go along with these fatality figures that can be prevented. You mentioned the audit of the Homeland Security and CIA. The Pentagon budget is unauditable, according to the General Accounting Office of the U.S. Congress, renamed the Government Accountability Office. These are the investigative accountants and auditors who rove around the executive branch departments and agencies. And every year, the unit that monitors the Pentagon budget declares it unauditable. When you have $800 billion of your tax money unauditable, you can imagine how much is wasted, how much is stolen, how much is duplicative, and how much is directed toward illegal objectives. So you should add the Department of Defense auditing.
Let's take a look at what you believe are the most important issues that we, the public, should be demanding our legislators pay attention to. And also, as an aside, why do you believe that many of the people on MSNBC have not held Obama to the same standards of accountability on the evisceration of habeas corpus and that they did with Bush?
The same reason that none of them have invited me on their show, not Rachel Maddow, not Oberman when he was there, haven't been on Chris Matthews for a long time. They're Democrats. They are partisans of the Democratic Party, and they shield Obama from the kind of criticism that they rain on other politicians. And because they adhere to the view that he's the least of the worst compared to the Republicans, and so they shield them in that manner from any kind of criticism. And, of course, they don't want people on their programs who might utter such criticisms.
Would you give us your insights on what you would say if you were debating President Obama about what he has promised but not done and must do in order to help America?
Well, you listed some of the banking and finance reforms that he doesn't mention. I mean, restoring Glass-Steagall means preventing the kind of mixing of commercial banking and investment banking that led to the Wall Street crash in 2008-2009. And he can't even utter the words. I mean, this is hardly a dramatic, radical move. Franklin Delano Roosevelt put it in place in the 1930s, and it worked. Until Bill Clinton and Robert Rubin, his Secretary of the Treasury, before he went to run Citigroup and make a ton of money, repealed it in 1999. We opposed it. We testified against it. It didn't matter. And so it was off to the races for the speculators in Wall Street using other people's money, including your pension money, mutual fund money, other savings, and small investors. And they looted and drained trillions of dollars in that collapse period while they enriched themselves and sent their companies to Washington for a gigantic taxpayer bailout. So he's got it all wrong. He said he's going to establish a financial crimes unit in the Justice Department without asking for more budget for the prosecutors, by the way. And, you know, that is needed. But going into the future, you've got to have structural change. You cannot have banks too big to fail, too big to be punished, too big to hold accountable in any way. And he did not, in his speech, direct the Justice Department to investigate the breakup of these banks, because after the crash, fewer giant banks controlled more of the nation's deposits. In other words, it was worse than before the crash. So we have five giant banks now that control over 65% of the deposits in this country. You know, Citibank, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo and others. So he didn't do that at all. It was a speech that was replete with political cowardliness. I mean, he did criticize Wall Street in a general way, but at the same time he was doing that before the U.S. Congress the other night. Posh restaurants in Manhattan were being rented out in order to raise money for Obama's political campaign by Wall Street contributors. So, I mean, how long does he think he can fool the people in this country with this kind of contradictory message? He has raised more money from Wall Street for his 2012 election than Mitt Romney and Gingrich combined. And in 2008, he raised more from Wall Street by far than John McCain raised. He set all kinds of records. And so these Wall Streeters, they listen to the speech, they hear the rhetoric, they say, well, he's got to do that in order to get votes, but nothing's really going to change. Until you expand enforcement budgets against corporate crime, fraud, and abuse, no matter what rhetoric there is, nothing's going to happen. There is a massive street crime wave in New York City, in every borough, and there's only 150 policemen in New York. People would say, well, we need more policemen on the streets. Well, you need more federal cops on the corporate crime beat. He didn't mention, for example, that $250 billion is lost every year because of billing fraud and abuse in the healthcare industry, and that includes fraud on Medicare. That was a figure from, again, the General Accounting Office in the early 90s. 10 cents out of every healthcare dollar is stolen that way. And now you would think that would be raised. I mean, if he wants to save money, that's one way to save money. When he was talking about taxation, he should have not just talked about taxes on the wealthy. And they're not increasing taxes. They're restoring taxes on the wealthy. They don't even know how to use the right language against the Republicans. It's restoring the taxes, part of the taxes that were assessed on the wealthier earlier in more prosperous times, I might add. But he never focused enough on these giant corporations like Verizon, Honeywell, General Electric, who make billions of dollars and don't pay any federal income tax. And like General Electric, they actually get billions of dollars in benefits back from the Treasury. So crazy are the loopholes in the federal corporate income tax laws.
There's three areas remaining, if you would address them. I think they're very important that we don't hear about at all. We have been led to believe that we have left Iraq in an honorable way, that we have restored democracy and freedom to the people of Iraq, and now they have their future ahead of them, all because of our sacrifices. Now, I've just interviewed over 1,000 vets over the last 27 months, and these vets today, these were all homeless vets, by the way, 16,000 of them living in just one area near Titusville, Florida, alone. And the only reason they're there is because, as one vet said, if I'm poor, I'd rather be poor and warm than poor and cold. Also, they have a man named Taylor there who himself was a homeless vet who is no longer homeless and represents their interest in trying to get them out of jail. Hard to imagine, but Ralph, I filmed and verified that a homeless vet sitting and reading a book in a veteran's park would get a ticket, and if they didn't move, would be arrested. And many of them are arrested for no other reason than they didn't have a driver's license if they came from another state, and he gets them out of jail. But they've committed no crime except that they're a poor vet. In any case, when I asked these vets, do you believe that what you went through in Iraq and Afghanistan, was it worth it? And to a person, they say, not when I realized that I was disposable afterwards. Now, this I'm going to quote from Human Rights Watch, an organization that I know you're very familiar with. But it was not in any of the major media as a commentary. Quote, Iraq, intensifying crackdown on free speech and protest, torture, secret prisons, attacks on demonstrators and journalists remain a reality in Iraq. And I'll quote just one paragraph. Iraq cracked down harshly during 2011 on freedom of expression and assembly by intimidating, beating, and detaining activists, demonstrators, and journalists, Human Rights Watch said today in their World Report. In February, Human Rights Watch uncovered a secret detention facility controlled by elite security forces who report to the military office of Prime Minister Maliki. The same elite divisions control Camp Honor, a separate facility in Baghdad which detains and tortures with impunity. Quote, Iraq is quickly slipping back into authoritarianism as it secretly forces abused prisoners, protesters, harasses journalists, tortures detainees without reprimand. Despite U.S. government assurances that it helped create a stable democracy, the reality is it left behind a bubbling police state, end quote. Now, if we were to take an honest look at what has happened in Iraq since 2003, depleted uranium affecting the environment, the effect upon the children's health, the effect upon their infrastructure, the shattering of the electrical grids and everything else, and the human rights abuses. When we look back now, and we have 5,000 approximately dead soldiers from Iraq and 44,000 injured, many who will be suffering for life because of the nature of their injuries. And yet the Republicans and Barack Obama and so many Democrats say it was worth it. It was the right place to be with the right efforts. And I'm thinking, and now it's reverted back into a police state, what exactly did we achieve, and shouldn't we be having an honest examination with independent progressive minds such as yourself and others to tell the American public the truth about our interventions around the world?
Well, you put it very well. There was a poll of soldiers in Iraq in January 2005 that the Pentagon did not challenge. In terms of its results, and over 70% of the soldiers thought we should get out of there in 6 to 12 months, including about 51% of the Marines. So when they're actually polled and they're given the privacy of their poll responses, the soldiers over there were just ordered over there, they're doing their job, that's how they'd make their livelihood, but they had no illusions about being there for freedom, protecting us, etc. The second thing is, you're right, the Obama and Bush administrations participated, Bush chiefly, in blowing Iraq apart. They destroyed this country. It is in a total wreck by siding with one sectarian group against another. Now we have these explosions almost every day, 30 killed, 50 killed here, there. Fights between Sunni and Shiites. They never fought under Saddam's dictatorship until the Shiites revolted at the end. But, you know, infant mortality, staggering, depleted uranium, contamination of drinking water, basic food supplies and other necessities of life, short. A few making a lot of money off the government contracts, both U.S. and Iraqi, and the emergence of a clear dictatorial trend in terms of the Iraqi regime, which we installed in Baghdad. And this is what we got for $1 trillion of your tax money that could have been spent rebuilding America's schools and libraries and drinking water systems and roads and bridges and public transit. And 5,000 lost soldiers and over 100,000 injuries. The Pentagon lowballs the injuries. We've challenged them on that. And millions of American families broken up, anguish, fear, divorces, domestic abuse from the soldiers coming back, traumatized, post-traumatic syndrome. Read about it all the time in the papers around the country. And what does Obama do? He, in the State of the Union, he treats the departure of the U.S. soldiers, many of them just to nearby Kuwait, hardly coming home, departures of nearby soldiers as mission accomplished, victory, and departure with honor. Nobody would laugh at that more than an Iraq war veteran, because they saw the truth. They saw the corporate contractors like KBR putting all this waste in pits, which they burned, and soldiers got sick, and soldiers got different kinds of cancers, and it was a one-day story in the New York Times, whatever. So we describe a lot of this in my new book, Gary, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. And it has 200 short descriptions of corporate abuses of the American people as consumers and patients and taxpayers and eaters and breathers and drinkers of water. And all these reports actually come from mainstream media, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post. And so I'm asking the reader who gets this book to give himself and herself a test. See if they can go through these fast-paced, documented corporate crimes and abuses and frauds on their own pocketbook and jeopardizing their own health and safety, housing foreclosure rackets, and so forth. And by the time they finish, at around 190 pages, see if they're willing to join together with a million Americans and start Congress Watch groups in every congressional district with their volunteer hours and funding four full-time champions in every congressional district by about 2,000 people. And you would change Congress so it becomes a representative of the people instead of the corporations. And they would hold these corporations accountable, because Congress is the easiest entry into recovering our country's presumed level of fairness and justice. It's the most powerful branch. It's made up of 535 men and women who put their shoes on every day like we do, senators and representatives. And right now they don't have to worry about much going on back home to watchdog them. They just worry about how many fundraising parties these corporations and their PACs are going to provide them here in Washington for their reelection. And so this book is an action book. It's an action strategy. You can get it online, obviously, or you can contact us at csrl.org. You can get it directly, and you can get more detail about what this pledge is involved. It's very, very astutely done, so that people pledge, but the pledge is not fulfilled until a certain number of other people in America pledge to join with you in these congressional watchdog groups. So it's csrl.org. It's a paperback. It's not that expensive.
Getting steamed over corporatism. I just have one final question for you. I know you're on a tight schedule, and I won't keep you after this, but I feel this is very important. I voted for you each time you ran, and when Democrats and my liberal friends would say, you're wasting a vote, you got to get the other people in office, I said, no. I said, if Ralph Nader's voted into office, we have a chance then not to go to war, to rebuild our cities. And I went through all the things I knew that would happen, or at least be advocated by a firm belief and not the compromises, and they refused. And I said, well, then look at it this way. Wouldn't it be better to vote for someone who may not win in this election at this time, but establishes a platform that we can build on and expand and work with coalitions who themselves are disempowered, like the Green Party and others, and so one day you represent a strong, viable third-party option, because people have had 4 years or longer to understand through articles or speeches what's really wrong. I said, if you cut Nader off now, which, by the way, this is a personal aside, but I was I've let my feelings be known about how Bill Maher and Michael Moore treated you when they got down and pleaded with you to get out of the race. I was embarrassed. I ask, what exactly have those two done into creating laws that have made it a better world? In any case, that's my own. I would never have tolerated that. That just burns me every time I think of what they did. In any case, you were willing to create partnerships with those who were willing to go forward for the common person today. Are you willing to look out for all the other people, even having discussions with Ron Paul or others, that where you can find some things to share in common and work off what you can agree upon, so that in the next election cycle we will have a viable third party from multiple different groups of people, picking up on the 41% of Americans who are independent and who are 67% now are positive about progressive, where only 48% are for liberal and less for Republican, where you have a massive amount of people wanting leadership guidance and people who have the maturity and insight to help guide us in the future, which you uniquely have and others have, working together. Your thoughts, please.
Well, you make a very good point, because if you keep saying, well, we're not going to vote for this person because even though we believe in him, he doesn't have a chance to win, you don't give any movement a chance to grow. And the way our two-party system is rigged, no challenger, unless, you know, they're multi-billionaires, has got a chance on the first round. The first round is to build. The second round is to build further. So if you don't vote for someone you believe in, who are you going to vote for? And you're going to get what you vote for. And if you don't tell the two parties that you've got somewhere to go and you can vote for another candidate, why should the two parties give you the time of day? Why should they even be concerned about you? Because if you're a liberal progressive, Obama says, well, they're going nowhere, so I don't even have to look back at them. I got them in my pocket. It's the old saying that if you signal to a politician that you as a voter can be taken for granted, you will be taken. That's an axiom. You will be taken. I always willing to work. Ron Paul is very good on the military budget. He's good on criticizing the Patriot Act. He's opposed to corporate bailouts and subsidies. He's opposed to empire, going anywhere in the world, violating international laws and producing a lot of civilian casualties. So he's a fresh voice on those debates in the Republican primary. And you've got somebody coming on who's a terrific
Rocky
leader.
Anderson.
Rocky Anderson, double two-time mayor of Salt Lake City. It's a very conservative state, and he was a very progressive candidate. He didn't turn tail, and now he's running for president on the Justice Party. And I'm glad you're having him on, Gary.
Well,
let me just say before we close, in case people didn't get it, the website to get this book, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win, the website is csrl.org. And you also see the nature of the pledge and how you can get involved and connect with a million other Americans to turn Congress around, and that's the way to turn these corporations around.
Thank you very much, Ralph Nader. Ralph, we are going to do all we humanly can do to bring together the progressive voices as a unified force. You have Bernie Sanders out there. You have Dennis Kucinich out there. You do have a few, not a whole lot, but you have some politicians who have not compromised, and get them all together to work together and say, look, let's just work together and we will make a difference in 4 years. The Native Americans had a saying, make your decisions for 7 generations ahead. I just want us
there
to make decisions for 5 years ahead, because I believe we're going to be facing some very difficult challenges. I believe what's happening in Europe is going to come here, and I believe that greed will continue, power will continue to control most of our decisions and our erosion of our rights. So we will be there with voices, yours at the top, guiding. So thank you very much, Ralph.
Thank you. thank you, Gary. Thank you for your work, your interviews, your films, and your wonderful audience.
Ralph Nader. And again, the book title is Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment with Rocky Anderson.
Put your hands together. Clap along with the music. The song is not a very hard one, you see. But I'd like everybody to listen to what I'm saying to you. You're the reason.
To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Knoll. In a few moments, we're going to speak with Rocky Anderson and offer him an opportunity to share with us what he will suggest in going forward to make his views better known. This is the Progressive Radio Network, and on this network, we have progressive minds. We are not ideologies. We are ideas. Ideologies are for people who are not growing. People who are stuck in a rut. Ideas are fluid in flow. Ideologies are not going to be flexible and are going to be intemperate. We believe that working together with a diversity of people from conservative and liberal backgrounds, people who come from a pro-environmental background and pro-business background, but work together for the common good. That's what we see the future to be. And we have more than enough people. We're just not working together. We need that. So we're going to talk about that. And I'm going to also be reading one email I got from Mitchell Cohen. He's the president of WBAI Station Board, on his comments concerning Barack Obama. In fact, I'll do that real quick. Here are my instant comments. Quote, he supported hydrofracking and so-called clean energy without mentioning what that means. He said he'll be opening up millions of acres of public land for that purpose. The only caveat was that he'd require companies doing the fracking to reveal the chemicals they used. The great Oz, Obama, also humbugged his way through proudly saying that more offshore oil is now being drilled than ever before, and he will expand on that. The caveat was saying he'd close tax subsidies and loopholes for oil companies who have been receiving them for more than a century. He did not call for exonerating the student debt or even providing a moratorium on it, as many had hoped. He called for all millionaires to pay 30%. Of course, as expected, he wrapped himself in the flag and rah-rahed the extrajudicial murders of bin Laden and instead of obtaining warrants and arresting them. And while praising himself for pulling back troop levels slightly in Afghanistan, said nothing about the U.S. government's relying on the vast increase in paid mercenary soldiers there. And he talked about making U.S. profitable for business to hire workers. He should have prefaced it by saying, now that we've busted unions and are eliminating environmental regulations and bailed out the banks and the auto industry, we can make U.S. corporations even more profitable. He also continued to support the so-called free trade agreements that sent millions of U.S. jobs abroad. Hey, I didn't take notes. Those are just some things I remembered. Mitchell Cohen, president of the WBAI Station Board, but he was saying those not on behalf of BAI or the Station Board, but those are his own private thoughts. In a moment, Rocky Anderson. Now, I'm going to take just a moment to offer some little fundraising for this station. By the way, this is the only non-commercial radio station where no one raises a penny. They don't have to. You'll never hear Danny Schechter and Jim Hightower and Laura Flanders and Richard Martin raising any money. They don't have to because once every week and a half or two, I take 5 minutes and I do it. And all the money, every penny, goes to this non-commercial station. I alone support the station, and I'm able to do it as long as I'm able to do it. I don't ask anyone to help. And I want to keep this as positive as possible. In this way, no corporate financing. No one's saying, we gave you a check, now you got the bid what we want. Not going to happen. So here's our special today. The first up is something brand new. Everyone likes something sweet. Well, this is. This is my brand new Coco Magic Bar. It's gluten-free, kosher, organic, vegan, 12 grams of fiber, omega-3 fatty acids, 40 antioxidants, 3 probiotics. It's low glycemic. Now, you're not going to taste all the ingredients. You're just going to taste a wonderful, smooth chocolate, all-natural, free trade, I might mention, and non-genetically engineered with the chocolate and the coconut blended together. Very smooth, delicious. It's the best tasting you have. But I defy anyone to find me a healthier bar anywhere. Here's my ingredients. Now you'll know. These are the ingredients in order of large to small. Spirulina, barley, grass, chlorella, wheatgrass juice, wheat sprouts, nori seaweed, barley greens, green tea extract, white tea extract, spinach, dulse, carrots, broccoli sprouts, parsley, alfalfa sprouts, blueberries, pomegranate, blackberries, mulberries, golden berries, which are also called gooseberries, apples, goji, coconut, Concord grape, grape seed extract, bilberry, rice bran, beet juice, acerola berry, acai, aloe vera, milk thistle, ginger, camu, lusuma powder, maca powder, that's a great powder for South America, bladderwrack, then we have omega-3 from vegan sources. All that is what you're getting. You taste none of it. You taste a delicious chocolate, organic, free trade, and non-genetically engineered coconut bar. It's a Coco Magic Bar. You get a box of them. That's one special. The other special is my number one created invention. This was the first. It was Green Stuff. Green Stuff is raw. Green Stuff gives you over 10,000 ORAC. That means high, high levels of antioxidants. It's grown in the purest conditions. It's brought in, all the vegetables are brought in, 20 different vegetables loaded with phytonutrients like the organic spirulina, the seaweeds, and the barley grass. And then they're juiced. Then they're dried without heat at 88 degrees. You've got celery and cauliflower and cabbage and kale and oat beta-glucan and asparagus and parsley and radishes and onions, collard greens, arugula, all those things, plus apple pectin. And that's what makes the Green Stuff so great. It's the number one product that I have, that I've invented. It's 500 grams, and I added 2 years to do this. I made it taste like nothing you've ever tasted. I had to blend cherries and lemon together. When I got that perfect blend, because it gives you this wonderful kind of cherry-lemon quality, because this way it makes it very easy for kids to like too. That's on sale. So Green Stuff is on sale. You're getting the coconut bars, either one. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And every nickel will go for the Progressive Radio Network. My guest joining us from Salt Lake City, Utah, is Rocky Anderson. Rocky, it's actually Ross and Rocky Anderson. He is a presidential candidate, but you wouldn't know it, for the Justice Party. You wouldn't even know that, because the mainstream media chooses not to hear what he has to say. Well, what does he have to say would be a threat? If he's a lightweight, if he has nothing that anyone's going to be interested in, bring him on. Therefore, you could show that he is of no substance. Unless he has a great deal of substance, what he has to say would embarrass you, and the pathetic excuses for the Republicans or the president on their different platforms. He's practiced law in Utah for 21 years. He's a former member of the Democratic Party, and among his achievements and positions, which have a chance to explore more right now, is he has done a lot for the Human Rights Campaign, one of the top advocates for that. Nice to have you with us today, Rocky.
Great to be with you, Gary, and thank you. And I'm thrilled that you had Ralph Nader on, because he has been such an amazing inspiration to all of us over the years, a man of accomplishment, a man of unbelievable commitment, and still really making a huge mark in this country. And his wisdom is something that I think is unsurpassed.
Rocky, as I did with Ralph earlier, I'm going to ask you also. I made a list. It's up on my website, GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNet.com. It has 20. It's a simple questions that why didn't the president touch on these issues? It's about 30 some issues. Would you take any one of those that you would either support or challenge and tell us why you would believe that these are important, whether it's demilitarization of our forces around the world and closing down our military bases, or ceasing gas hydrofracking, which is also leading to higher levels of earthquakes and offshore drilling, or auditing the Federal Reserve and the Defense Department and Homeland Security and the CIA, or reducing our budgets in these departments? Tell us where you would begin to make major changes that right now are not even being discussed.
Well, I was absolutely distressed to hear President Obama start out his State of the Union address being a cheerleader for our not only illegal but absolutely disastrous invasion and occupation of Iraq. When he talked about, he ended his comments saying that the United States is safer and more respected around the world because of what was a war of aggression, completely illegal under international law, and it was based on a pack of lies, resulting, by the way, in over a million Iraqi deaths, either directly or indirectly. The Johns Hopkins studies documenting that throughout the course of the occupation, it has been an unmitigated disaster. And not only for the Iraqi people and for those who were killed and injured from the American and other allied armed forces, but also for the long-term security of our country. We go in and invade and occupy a Muslim nation, we can expect to be hated, absolutely despised for generations. And let us not forget, when Obama was in the United States Senate, he consistently voted for funding for the illegal occupation. He wanted to keep troops in Iraq. He talks about taking the troops out now as some great victory. He fought to keep troops in. When we finally removed troops, that was according to George W. Bush's timeline, not Obama's. And the only reason we ended up taking troops out was because the Obama administration was not able to get the promises from the Iraqi government that they would provide immunity for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by our troops. So that, from the outset, I think was one of the most shameful episodes probably in the history of States of the Union. Now he sounds like another George Bush, like a clone, talking about how this absolute outrage has made the United States safer and more respected.
Good. I want to go to...
He provided no rationale for our continued presence in Afghanistan. I've never heard it from this president. Why are we in Afghanistan? He has never made the case for that from the very beginning.
Okay.
And then, and related to the war and the illegality and in the absolute disregard for the War Powers Clause and the War Powers Resolution, President Obama said, and these were his exact words, we want a nation, quote, where everyone plays by the same set of rules. Well, we know that he doesn't really believe in that. He believes in a small, favored, elite group of people who not only benefit from the greatest disparity of income and wealth since the 1920s, we are living in another gilded age without a doubt, but he also is a practitioner of this two-tiered system of government and justice in this country, where there is a small elite group of people who can commit all sorts of egregious violations, felonies, and get away with it. And he set the tone for that right from the beginning, saying, oh, let's look forward and not backwards with regard to war crimes. But he did the same thing when he was in the United States Senate, when he voted for retroactive immunity for felonies committed by telecom companies. Now, being a president who's received more from Wall Street than any other candidate in the history of this country, and those investments have paid off beautifully, a lot of return on those investments, because under this administration, there has not been one day served in prison or jail by any of those Wall Street criminals committing the grossest kinds of financial fraud. Okay. And it's the administration, you know, he calls for more enforcement laws, allowing enforcement. Those laws are on the books. It's because this administration has chosen to look the other way, and it's not surprising when he surrounded himself by these same people from Goldman Sachs and the rest of Wall Street.
Rocky, I'm going to ask you about four questions, and if you would please give us your abbreviated answer on them, all right? Because it'll get us an idea where you're going, and then we can further discuss this on an upcoming Monday night show where I can explore this with for the whole hour if need be. By the way, I'd earlier mentioned free trade. I meant fair trade on what I was discussing. Now, a lot of us are very concerned about the erosion of our constitutional rights and the Bill of Rights, and that those who have been speaking out, activists from all areas, plus people who are not necessarily known at all but have written critical letters or have joined protests, are now targets. They're on different watch lists. What would you do to reestablish the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and to get us out of being a totalitarian state?
The most important thing is to restore the courts as a check on abuses, including illegal conduct by the executive branch. We have a system in place now under the state secrets doctrine where the very perpetrator branch of government, the executive branch, can go to the courts and make its own determination, not leaving the determination up for the courts, but the executive branch making its own determination that to move forward with the case challenging illegal conduct would mean the disclosure of supposed important state secrets, and the courts dutifully dismiss those cases, meaning we have no separation of power anymore. We have no system of checks and balances anymore. It is the most subversive thing that's happened to our republic since our nation's founding. That needs to be changed. The presidency has become more imperial under President Obama. Now this president, who, by the way, asked for the power in 2009, it's not like it was somehow imposed upon him without his wanting it from the Congress. The first thing that any president needs to do is not only say, I will never exercise these powers of indefinite detention, which are an absolute undermining of our due process clause, values.
Rocky, are you aware that he didn't even bring up, at least if he did, I missed it, the defense appropriation bill that so many of us are concerned about and talked about why this is an issue? It's a major issue, and he didn't even bring it up in his...
The power of indefinite detention.
Yes.
It signifies the greatest transformation of our republic and our constitutional values since the founding of this country. The fact that the vast majority of Congress and the president would enact legislation allowing someone to point out to anybody, including a, quote, belligerent, and believe me, I'm a belligerent, they could come by, take me away, kidnap me, indefinitely detain me, which means up to the end of my life, with no legal representation, no charges, and no trial. Why is it that the people of this country aren't out in the streets calling for return to our most basic, fundamental constitutional values, a return of due process, a return of the hallowed right to habeas corpus? Gary, thank you for raising this, because people in this country need to understand how vastly our system of government is being transformed and undermined by this administration. It was started by President Bush, but it's being continued on in the most subversive ways by this administration.
By the way, just so people understand, throughout history, in Mussolini's Italy, in Hitler's Germany, in Spain, in Yugoslavia, any time you've had totalitarianism or fascism or police state, it has never been what we've seen in the movies. You still have people living normal lives, but until they're the victim, they don't appreciate what happens to their normal life until the police come for them one day, and then they're disappeared. This happened in Argentina, it happened in Salvador, it happened in Brazil, and now we have this capacity for this to happen now. Now the FBI says that it is considering anyone who is going on property, farms, animal farms, and filming or photographing abuse of the animals in factory farms, that they're now a terrorist. So what would you do to stop the FBI, to challenge the military-industrial complex, the spy complex? What would you do for... We have over 800,000 employees in 16 different agencies. What would you do with that whole apparatus that's there hovering over our lives?
Well, first of all, there would be no assassination list, and I would make it clear to the American people that for the first time in our nation's history, a president, President Obama, included U.S. citizens on his assassination list. And in the course of those assassinations, by the way, a 16-year-old boy was assassinated. He was considered an innocent bystander, but that's the kind of thing that's happening with these drone attacks.
Would you go back and hold those people accountable in the FBI and the CIA and other intelligence agencies for crimes against humanity they committed under Bush and Obama and others?
Kerry, if there were violations of the law, they should be investigated and prosecuted.
Right.
That's our system.
Good.
Of freedom.
I only
and
have time for two more questions. What would you do with the Federal Reserve? Would you abolish it? Would you change it? Would you allow continued bailouts and quantitative easings that have gone on now uninterrupted under two presidents?
You want quick answers to these
yes.
questions? I'll give you the fastest one I can give, and that is it can no longer be a system where one person like Alan Greenspan, who is so disastrous to this country, gets to call the shots and withhold evidence. It needs to be under our representative form of government. If it needs to be under the Treasury, then that probably is the best way of doing that. So there's accountability by elected officials, and there ought to be a government watchdog who has access to all of the information. And at the same time, the chair of the Federal Reserve reports to Congress. The head of this watchdog agency should also report, because that would have made all the difference if somebody was calling Alan Greenspan on his nutty Ayn Randian deregulation march toward
disaster. Of course, if you eliminated the Federal Reserve, you don't have to call anyone for their corruption or ineptitude, because you give it to the Treasury to do. My last comment or question for you, and that is, would you provide those who cannot afford it with a single-payer universal health coverage?
I would absolutely call, and I always have, for universal health
right.
care coverage.
We only have
23 million people.
Okay, we have 60 seconds. Would you be willing to sit down and discuss ideas with Ron Paul to see what you have in common, what you disagree upon, to see if there's some ability to form some coalitions now or in the future, and with everyone else that's a progressive out there, even though many of the ideas you're going to be on opposite ends of, to find what is important you can agree upon and work together?
Absolutely. And that's what the Justice Party is all about, finding people that agree on the fundamentals. But I've got to say, there's much about Ron Paul that I adamantly disagree with, including his opposition to the Civil Rights Act. He's a man who thinks it's a matter of personal freedom.
I agree. I absolutely agree with you. But look at it like this. I would agree with him on 7 issues. I would disagree with him on 33 issues. But I would disagree with Obama on every issue, and I disagree with all the other Republicans on every issue.
I think we've got to find our common ground. I absolutely agree with you, and there's a lot, especially the conclusions where Ron Paul ends up, which is exactly where I end up on those issues. The problem is that where he ends up on things like the war and restoring our Constitution and staying out of policing the rest of the world, I've been there all my life. In my adult life, working on those issues, but we've also got to make clear where our areas of disagreement are, and respectfully disagree and carry on a debate.
That's correct, and I believe that intelligent people can disagree, but focus upon what's most important for the people. How can people reach out to you? Give us your website, please.
It's at www.voterocky.org. There's a lot of information there. You can see things that I've written, speeches I've given over many, many years.
And what about JusticePartyUSA.net?
Yes, that's the party's website. It's being completely revamped and updated. And that's at www.JusticePartyUSA.org.
Rocky, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to be on with us today and share your points of view.
Thank you, Gary.
Rocky Anderson. He is a presidential candidate for the Justice Party. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening.